Welcome to Chronic Combat Conversations, a betting review on our week off, looking back at the first two events of 2024 for the UFC. It's TB Scouting MMA and
the Guru. Let's be real, TB. Let's call it what it is. We're here working for the algorithm. That goddamn algorithm.
We're sluts for the algo. But at the same time, I think it also is important to look back more consistently at our betting approach as we try to grow. And I think this is actually going to be a good exercise for us too. So if you're here for whatever reason, please throw a like, please subscribe to the channel. It means a lot, but what you really came here for and what you're probably not even here for, we got Ankalaev versus Walker 2 kicked off the year. And just to break down the event,
banger of a card.
What were our official bets? And where did we go right? And where did we go wrong? So Joshua Van Felipe Buenis, not going to lie, had like Van over 1.5, Van round 3 decision, just didn't quite get there, right? Just not quite the round 3 decision. That was a mistake. Van was just the better fighter. I mean, Guru, you got any other thoughts on that one?
My thought is that, you know, I feel like we were maybe a little worried about playing the chalk on Van, but he well deserved it, even though he has now had 3 UFC fights and lost 3 round 1s.
Yeah, deserved.
He comes out and fires with the hands. He looked great. He's certainly a top prospect.
You know what wasn't deserved? Tom Nolan being a -3 whatever favorite against Nicholas Mota, a guy with UFC experience. That was just hilarious. And for how confident we were, it also sucks to just remember it's a guy off Contender Series that we faded with a smaller guy on Contender Series. So just a thing to remember going forward. Be careful about how much you trust these Contender Series guys coming off.
Overcorrected their debut. Yeah, overcorrected the steering wheel on a very high money line, and he certainly hadn't earned it. By the way, Josh Van, why didn't we give him a like fighter to look out for or rookie of the year type nomination?
That's, you know, and this is why we got to keep him in mind for like, he's not a most improved fighter per se, but I mean, this guy could be like a breakout fighter of 2020.
If he has a fantastic year, I mean, let's look how
he's trying to fight 6 times apparently. So Josh Van,
that would do it.
But so I guess an example of where you can take the Contender Series guy is when he's facing someone that got killed on short notice, that got signed on the UFC to replace someone on short notice. So, yeah, Weston Wilson was not the guy to fade Gene Silva with, right? Like, whereas Nicholas Mota, you could do that, but oh man. So, yeah, Gene Silva, but like, it took almost to round 2. We bet fight to start round 2. That was
one of the big things I think there's a couple things. One of the big things I think we missed in the Mota fight was just how unorthodox a striker and how frustrating a striker Trey Ogden is, how difficult and annoying that was. So he looked kind of gun shy there, but then you come out versus Tom Nolan, who's literally a punching bag with no striking defense. He's and totally open for counters. You're serving it up on a silver platter for him. And that was a frustrating miss on the read there.
It was. And we definitely, we knew that there's an opportunity to fade Tom Nolan. We didn't realize it was so quick. But he does like trains that should have given us a good idea. However, this fight was like one of my better bets on the card, just from like a unanimous decision. Didn't really have to sweat things. Fareed Basharat, I caught him at -170 the week before, ends up closing at a -270 range. Maybe didn't quite earn the -270, but unanimous decision at -170. I'll take it all day. That was a good read. Good bet. What do you think, man?
Basharat, man, what he displayed in terms of his takedowns, the urgency, the pace, like elite level, top percentage. You want to see him continue to work on his striking, right? Because obviously he's grappling dependent. Like if you stuff these takedowns or he really does get tired, he's fucked. But I mean, against Taylor Lopoulos, dude was really never competitive in the fight. Because he just got well. I mean, the striking stats, as you see, are much closer than how the fight really played out.
Yeah, agreed. And we'll move right along. Shout out everybody joining the chat right now. If you haven't already, throw a like. Please subscribe to the channel if you somehow aren't already. But we're moving on. We're breaking down these fights that just happened, just to get a little review, take back, sharpen the skills here. Marcus McGee, that was damn. He was just such a cleaner striker. And when you have a low-level kickboxer, like a guy that, he's a kickboxer, but like then you watch his tape and it's like, is he really technical? Is he really that good? And like Marcus McGee was just a better fighter everywhere. So he earned every bit of his price line. I should have been playing him inside the distance.
Yeah, again, so another one of those fights, like Josh Van, Marcus McGee, that's like the most beautiful, money line parlay you could make, right? In terms of parlay, I mean, parlay's a bad idea, right? But that's like the most beautiful money line parlay you could have made. And we kind of got sketched out on some of the chalk there, and instead went with Thomas Nolan. Like, it just wasn't ideal.
Not ideal. And you're taking, not ideal. That's the way we'll leave it. You want to take the Parsons Semmelsberger recap, or do you want me to keep rolling here?
Man, I missed that. I was
fair enough. That's right. We talked about that. No worries. So Preston Parsons, man, everything all the people that picked Parsons said would happen. Semmelsberger, too willing to get taken down, too willing to grapple himself, especially against a better grappler. The guy has better cardio. He was training for the fight. So Semmelsberger on short notice, that should have been a no-no. Instead, I touched it just a little bit. Parsons did get hurt. He almost got finished a couple times, but overall just ended up being the better cardio and the more grit, the better grappler. Just what it was.
Yeah, classic striker versus grappler matchup. I had felt that maybe the grappling would be too much of a problem, but then we looked at Semmelsberger's knockdown ratio and we're like, oh, he's going to kill him. Well, he fucking didn't.
Yeah, he didn't.
So not surprising. You know, when you're that worried about the takedowns, then you're not really letting your hands go to their full potential either. So Semmelsberger, and look at the career skid now. He snatched defeat from the jaws of victory, gets knocked out, Uros Medic. He's what, a 3-fight losing streak now? Oof.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. Honestly, so we're moving on. I fought, a couple weeks ago. I actually did a very good job. I outstruck Waldo Cortez Acosta.
How did he win the fight? What was this fight? I didn't see it.
Just a disaster. It was Cortez Acosta doing the salsa for 2 rounds and landing enough strikes and kind of hurting Andre at points. And then Andre clearly wins a round on all 3 scorecards. So, So it's just it's gross. It's gross. But at the same time, that's why you don't bet Cortez Acosta inside the distance against anybody. Anyways, I hope you didn't do that. We didn't do that. We didn't even touch the fight.
One of the things I was happiest about was this bet, right? The fact that we were on Bruno Fajeia, played him by knockout in round one. Again, it's another pick where I feel like I still wish we left meat on the bones. I still feel like, we could have played at least the props harder too. We knew what was coming.
Yeah.
Bruno, a fight I missed, but it's a... I'm looking at the stats here. He outlands him. He gets a takedown on him. The switch stances. Phil Hawes, yes, of course he's the better MMA fighter skill for skill, without a doubt. But his snooze button is ridiculous. So
the surprising takeaway. Surprising takeaway, Bruno Fajeda was the better MMA fighter.
Really?
Yes. He took him down. Right. He got top control. He landed more strikes before the knockout. He was just a better fighter.
Yeah, I mean, that actually makes sense. So, I mean, anybody saying that Phil Hawes was the right side or the right pick at dog money, you missed dog money on Fajeia and then made a mistake.
So what was also a mistake was not taking Mario Bautista.
Good Lord. What is this fight? Ricky Simon, again, it was something that we kind of smelled in terms of, at least I thought I did. TB made a great point. He's like, who's he training with? And I'm I don't know. And he just hasn't gotten any better. And I remember doing the breakdown show and remember somebody mentioning the who he had on the Marab fight as a litmus test. I'm like, ooh, is it really good that we're using references from 5+ years ago?
Not ideal.
No, it's not good enough. And he clearly has not improved at all since then. So Bautista clearly outstrikes and outclasses him.
Yeah, and honestly, it really didn't even end up being that close. And Simone, I mean, he barely ends up surviving to fuck over my fight doesn't go the distance prop that I felt so good about. So anyways, Camber, thanks for joining. Miss Amber, Gamberly, whatever you want to go by. Camber Ribbons, she's got all the names out there. But what are thoughts about Jim Miller at UFC 300? I would love to see it. And he's fighting Bobby Green, right? So
I knew that was
amazing fight. Amazing fight. And what a performance by Jim. I know it says 80 strikes, but Jim Miller dominated that fight. Well, his leg kicks, Muay Thai Jim Miller, baby.
Yeah. Another fight I can't wait to go back and watch when we're doing tape for the April fight.
Amen. Yeah. Gamberly doing the great stats out there on Twitter. Make sure you're following her. But as we continue along the main event, it was just so obvious Ankalaev would end up finishing Walker. However, we beat the over 1.5 by 12 seconds. How fucking amazing.
We never get lucky on. We usually have the bad beat to tell, which I can't wait to tell the bad beat when we break down Strickland Duplessis. But for once, something falls our way. And we get the over 1.5 by like 8 seconds. And fantastic. And you know, it was Johnny was done. I mean, we were fairly lucky to cash that. Like, he was exhausted, and Ankalaev hits too hard and too precise, and he's done.
Yeah, so that's it. We go on to our fight card from last week. We start with the amazing pick of Jimmy Flick over Malcolm Gordon. We predicted exactly what would happen, that Malcolm Gordon might be winning up until the moment he doesn't. Jimmy Flick pulls one out of the bag, 4 submission attempts. Just absolutely incredible watching that.
Jimmy Flick lands 3 fucking strikes. 3 so strikes. It's a beatdown. And he basically, Jimmy Flick pulls the Alexa Grasso as Malcolm Gordon overextends himself, is exhausted, and he just snatches that shit.
Bro, but he threatened him like all fight with different sub attempts. And then finally, like, Malcolm was like, oh my God, you're not dead. All right, I'm dead. So he's like, here, take my bag. Done. Take my bag. Yeah, he's
retired.
Done.
Post-fight. Done.
Jazz DeVicius.
Here's my bad beat.
Yeah, so we had under 2.5 tracked on Chronic Combat. I bet the fight doesn't go the distance. Still at plus money. Guru sticks with the under 2.5. I'm somewhat content. He's in the trenches. That was a tough one, and it definitely could have been stopped earlier. But at the same time, Jazmine also could have shown a bit more killer instinct. And she talks after the fight about trying not to see the human being in there. When she sees her bleeding, she feels bad. It's like, I could kind of tell she kind of didn't really go for the kill and really throw the strikes. But she gets the sub, but it's like, damn, man. Like, she could have gotten that a lot sooner. Brother, and the refs sucked too. The refs.
Brother, the terrible. First round, forget significant strikes. The first round total strikes, Jazmine Jazz DeVicius lands 138 of 173. Priscilla Cachoeira goes 5 of 12. Stop the fight.
It's terrible.
She's not she's not defending. She's getting beat down. She doesn't want to be there. Simply being conscious is not the litmus test of what it means to be a stop a fight. And that's a bad beat. It's just you don't it was one of the few times a 10-7 round has been registered in UFC history. And I 100,000, we were sitting there with TV, 100,000% agree with that. It absolutely was a 10-7. Beat the piss out of her with zero resistance and nothing coming back.
Yes, sir.
Horrible. Horrible.
Guru was right. I was wrong. Sam Patterson beats you on Linus. Linus does not belong in the UFC, and he's no longer in the UFC.
So here's the thing with us. Like, again, like, to me, it bums me out when we leave meat on the bones. Thank God I'm so happy I tracked Jimmy Flick and Sam Patterson, but no chutzpah, no balls. I put a quarter unit on Jimmy Flick and a half unit on Sam Patterson. Like, why? Where's the balls? Where's the balls?
You need more huevos.
Exactly.
So I'm going to just remind you in the future, where's your balls at, kid? Because that's what you need. You need to be confident.
Shout out Clint. Follow your balls.
Talk about following your balls. Jillian Robertson inside the distance versus Viana seemed like some of the safest chalk on the card. She was the round
we avoided it.
Bet, but we also didn't play the knockout at plus 750, which was like a conversation point, but we never quite got there. But we did get the round 2 at plus 400, plus 500, whatever it was.
500.
Solid. We had the right idea. We stayed away from the Viana shot, even though she looks scary on the feet. She never stays there.
Yeah. And again, another one like Marcus McGee, like Joshua Van, that at minus 200-300, we're like, oh, we're worried about chalk. Like, safe. Yeah. Safe money line.
Easy. So, easy money.
But you have to remember, by the way, which you didn't highlight, so I will be happy to highlight it now. One of my best bets of the entire card, one of the best breakdowns we had, was taking the fight doesn't start round 3 in this fight.
Yeah. Great call.
Each one of them, between them, they had only had 2 wins past the 3rd round. So it's like this fight absolutely is going to end, and you see Jillian Robertson get it in round 2. Good Pollyanna Viana has original good submission defense, but as she gets tired, she loses it.
That's it. All right. So
robbery.
Ramon Tavares, Sir Jesus.
You can nominate this one for robbery of the year for 2024. You'll hear about this again when we do our year in review in December. But robbery. He wins two rounds. It's ridiculous.
Damage. So yeah, I think it was the damage from round one that continued into round three that let them think he was losing round three, but it wasn't close. I really thought he had all the, not just like landing more strikes, but the forward pressure, the everything. And Ramon misses weight. So how are you going to reward this guy on the split decision when it was like terrible and whatever, you know, it just is what it is. Sometimes you take a bad beat. That was one of them. Sean Woodson, Charles Jourdain. The funniest part of this fight wasn't that we bet Charles Jourdain, but it's at the end when they're announcing the split decision. And I could have sworn, and me and Guru were sitting there, Bruce Buffer was like on crack that night because he goes like, and the winner, Sean Woodson. Like he was saying Charles.
He was absolutely saying Charles and switched his cadence, switched what he was saying, blended it into Charles. A fight where I have to tip my hat to a lot of people on MMA Twitter were just like, you know, Sean Woodson going to make it closer, you know, and I was like, no, Charles Jourdain going to come out and finish him. I mean, to me, and again, it's kind of where we fucked up. It's like, okay, we're ready to pick Charles Jourdain minus 180, but like the finish isn't baked into that. Yet we're not willing to take Chris Curtis at minus 180 because the finish is baked into that and we don't expect him to get, like, we read that wrong. The winner was Sean Woodson, Charles Jourdain. I mean, his game plan was clearly to strike from the outside and then try to grapple with him. And neither are an option when he's so much bigger than you. It just is, it's terrible. So that's like, was really stupid. And then the Chris Curtis, Marc-Andre Barrett fight is a split decision, but I guess it was a boring fight.
But it was close, man. And Barrio really turns it up as round two and round three go. So I got to give him credit.
But the power bar, the guy that you expected to throw first and land third, gets outlanded 140 to 122.
That I did not expect Chris Curtis to land 140 significant strikes from distance in an MMA fight. I could have never predicted. Well,
the thing is that I feel like somebody like Barriott was just there in front of him to keep.
Would you say he was available?
He was absolutely available.
All right. So and then
Brad Katona. Brad Katona was he just had no juice.
Disappointing.
He's low T. You know, his style doesn't fit well in this new era of UFC judging. And by what I mean by that is that they are following the letter of the law. And if you guys go read the scoring criteria, it basically, it's a lot of legal mumble jumbo, but it basically says if the damage isn't even, nothing else fucking matters. Not octagon control, not the number of strikes, it's damage. That's it. That's how you have to score. And Brad Katona doesn't score damage. He never has. He's a baby. Four of nine takedowns. He gets 4 minutes of control time. He's not doing anything. He's getting outlanded by 40 strikes. Like,
it's bad.
The problem with that is that we felt that Garrett Armfield was a, because of that's what we saw on tape. He was winning in round one, round two. That was it. So we're like, okay, he automatically doesn't have cardio. No, he's at Marathon MMA, you know, run by Trey Ogden, and he's in great shape. That's the gym that took over for
he's gassed out in plenty of fights in the past.
He obviously looks okay. He made an improvement. He's clearly made an
improvement. Fair enough. Yes, clearly. And also Katona never put the dude only landed 64 strikes. Tyler, appreciate you joining.
Yes.
Shout out from one Tyler to another. This is why we needed to go live this week, quite frankly. Like, I'm bored out here, man. I need to go over what's going on, you know? So, yeah, exactly. Like, there's not enough stuff out there this week. I'm trying to find more stuff to listen to. And, you know, I hope you people are enjoying. Throw a like, you know? Listen, Mosvar Evloev. Oh, Mosvar versus Arnold.
Oh, Mosvar.
Oh, Movi.
Bro, could you imagine, like, all right, first off, now you're a chick. And then you actually like somebody, right? He's handsome. He's jacked. He's a fighter, whatever. And then his name's, Mosvar.
Yeah, that's horrible. It's unreal. But anyways, he's a future fade in five-round fights. I like him in this fight because it was three rounds. Yeah. That was the only reason. If this goes five, I liked Arnold Allen. So,
oh, and he was taking over in round five. I think he finishes him in round four.
Round four. Yep, definitely.
Like, so Mosebar does not have championship caliber stuff going on. Like,
no, he's great for three rounds, for two rounds, I should say.
The fade is going to be fantastic when we get that opportunity. Well, can we look at that very quickly? I'm going to pull it up on my end. I want to see who in the rankings. Who do we think takes him?
Oh, God. All right, let's finish this first before we get there. Neil Magny versus Mike Malott. We talked about this as being a, you know, Rich, Just Win, baby, the mush of the week. We talked about not betting Mike Malott at minus 400. What we didn't do, what I didn't do, is fully pull the trigger on Neil Magny. Now, Guru had a little on round three. Good job. But, damn it, I should have bet Magny. What an idiot.
No, so no, I did everything wrong. I did everything I wasn't supposed to do. We come on the pod, and if you listen to the pod, we both start out unbelievably sketched, tentative, kind of walking the tightrope between both sides. And shout out to John DFS. He's like, no, Matt Malott, some of the safest of the week. Y'all are tripping. And we respect him, and we're kind of like, yeah, you're right, you're right. Because we're like, okay, you're right, you're right. And then I tweet out a day or two before. I'm like, instead of betting Mike Malott moneyline, why not bet fight doesn't go the distance? Less chalk. I didn't do it. And I played Mike Malott moneyline. And of course, and then I decided to play Neil Magny round three hedge, but I didn't put enough money on it. I didn't do enough. $2 won me 56. It was nice, but I lost more than that. And I was stupid. I didn't follow my balls again. And why not play a little bit more on such a sick prop when you know that the whole night had just went so sketchy at that point too. All those decisions, all the Canadian male fighters losing, the night had just been so strange. And I should have been stronger, but hey, Captain Hindsight is like my superhero. So it is.
Oh God. I would like to apologize. This is the moment in the show where I have to come to terms with the fact that I made Myra Buena Silva my biggest bet of last week. And like, I'm a disaster for that. So I apologize. There were warning signs. I didn't fully dig into the level of competition that she beats on the way up. Guru, let me know about it. It's just not good. And what I will say is that skill for skill in the first round, things were looking great. Then you realize, wait a second, she's slowing down. Wait a second, she's going for submission over position. Wait a second, she's going for explosive actions over control. Oh, Movesvar, I'm losing this fight over five rounds. It was disgusting. Disgusting.
Absolutely. You know, we'd have to ask our UFC historians on MMA Twitter. I mean, she really might have had the worst and weakest run to a title shot in UFC history.
Very sad.
It was so poor. And I'll be honest, like I was lazy with it. I really was. And if we're just being honest about it, I didn't do as much tape on this fight. I just felt like the size and physicality of it was enough. And I just thought that Pennington after a year off and taking time off with Tisha was just going to be, you know, that it wasn't going to be time, but no, it was 12 years of a realized dream. And she had five round cardio. Yeah, and Myra Buena Silva is just not in good shape. She's just not.
Bad.
And ATT is not the gym it was in 2015, 2016. It is not it's not even a top three, top five gym. You know, I think if it is top five, if it sneaks in there, it's because of the sheer size and volume of training partners, but I don't put it there.
I can't argue with that. Last fight. There's been a lot of talk about the Dricus du Plessis and Sean Strickland main event. I do need to rewatch it. I thought rounds 2, 3, 4 go to du Plessis. I could be wrong. I could be biased. I had a bet on du Plessis. He saved my night from being a really bad one, brought it back. I live bet him plus 250 after round one also. So I had like 20 on that, 50 on his money line. Saves me my Myra Buena Silva losses. But at the end of the day, well, Chronic Combat, I think I personally had like 0.05 unit profit on that card, like basically break even on the first card. So it's like, listen, we didn't trash our bankroll right away starting off the new year, but not exactly off to the hottest start. Guru, what were your thoughts on this fight before we wrap it?
Fantastic fight. early nomination for Fight of the Year, right? A just incredible back.
Yeah, it's up there. It's up there.
I scored 1, 2, and 5 for Mr. Sean Strickland. But like you, I had a bet on Drickus. So very, very interesting. I also tweeted out and said that, you know, the UFC, I'm so sick of them doing immediate rematches. But this fight is like, no, this isn't Volkanovski Makhachev with a fucking rematch. Like, this is a real fucking rematch. And one I'd actually really like to see. But they're never going to do it. Sean Strickland, they didn't want him to be champion to begin with. And Dana White said the same thing, though. Dana White said 1-2-5 Strickland. So, yeah, it's very close. I think similarly, TB, I just felt like the damage from that headbutt just continued to score for Drickus. And when you look at them post-fight, like even a couple days after now, Drickus is a fucking mess. And Sean is fine other than the headbutt. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm not mad at it. And new. So, interesting.
By the way,
as I pull it up here, I did pull up the featherweight division.
Yes, yes.
You've got Moisvar Evrulev at number 5. Above him, you have Brian Ortega at number 4, which is ridiculous.
That's a W. Okay.
Anybody, Brian Ortega has no wins against anybody.
Well, he's about to lose to Yair, so it's all good.
Again, yeah. So anyway, so you've got Moisvar 5. You've got Brian Ortega 4. You've got Ilya Topuria at 3.
That's enough.
You've got Yair Rodriguez at 2.
That's enough.
And you've got Max Holloway at 1. So he's
reached his pinnacle.
Yeah. He's a fade from here on out, basically, unless they give him somebody below him.
Fair enough. I can't argue with that. Guru, thank you for joining me tonight. Had a pretty good audience, I must say. Appreciate everybody stopping by and enjoying our show. Quick one for the fans. Just want to, you know, keep on brushing up and making sure we're staying sharp out here.
Very, Guru, very important for anybody listening.
Yes.
We are going live not Wednesday. We are going live on Tuesday because we have a very, very special guest joining us. We will be going live with Mr. Liam Picks Fights, and it's going to be very, very exciting.
That's right. Yeah, normally not available Wednesdays. Your boys now got Tuesdays off. I'm happy to oblige. So should be a baller time. Can't wait. Great guest. Guru, wrap it up. I'm going to play the music when I feel it's appropriate.
Hey. Hey. Be safe out there. No.